Picture the scene again. It's election day, and there's a buzz about town. The news is running the election as the main story all day long. Which party is going to win?
This feels familiar.
It does, doesn't it? Deja vu. But as you go to cast your vote, this time you're thinking, if I don't do this, I'm going to have to pay a $20 Australian fine, so I better get on down to the polling station and vote.
Wow, it's interesting. Hello, and welcome to the Morality of Everything. As was clear from that, we're still continuing our voting series. Today we'll be talking about mandatory voting. Should we make it compulsory? How should we make it compulsory? And we'll be talking a lot about actual context and incentives. We spent a lot of the last episode talking about duties and you know, what you should want to do. In this one, we'll be talking more about, like, practically what kind of things can you do, and we'll be talking about some of the biases, for example, to actually paying a fine versus, you know, the opportunity cost of paying by not turning up.
Exactly. I'm Jacob, by the way, your co-host.
I'm Anthony, the other co-host.
Thank you for everyone who's left reviews, and thank you to everyone for whom we are a top Spotify podcast. That's really, really flattering. Thank you.
Yes. Again, actually, we mentioned at the beginning of the series, but we'll include a link to our calendar, and we'll also include a link to a survey. You know, we are startup people. This is a sideline for us. We do it for fun. But it means that we bring the same approach where we try to iterate on our product. So we need feedback from you. Tell us, what do you enjoy? What don't you enjoy? Should I get rid of Jake? Give me the mandate. If enough of you say it,
the returning guest will become the co-host.
But yes, thank you very much. And please do leave reviews. Please do share. Actually, we're one of the most shared podcasts on Spotify, apparently. Woo. But that's also the best way to grow, especially because we don't do gimmicky nonsense like bringing in guests and then, like, that bloody... There's an English guy who's really annoying with this, and he talks about himself. Anyway.
Yeah. That's not the format. It's always, we like doing it as the two of us. So if you enjoy listening to us as much as we enjoy recording this, please. Spread
onto the
love. Onto the show. So over 20 countries have some form of compulsory voting, which requires citizens to register to vote on election day. As per our example in the intro, one of the most well-known examples is Australia. All Aussie citizens over 18, except those of unsound mind or criminals, must be registered to vote and show up at their designated polling place on election day. And this has been the case since 1924. Voter turnout dropped below 60% prior to that, and in every election since, it's never been below 91%. And the reason it's not 100% is because if you're ill or otherwise incapable of voting, you can have your fine waived. And obviously some people just get fined. It's actually not as high as I thought it would be. $20, I was like,
I think the really interesting thing is that, like, clearly it's not a punitive fine. Clearly, maybe it's not even a statement of duty. It sounds like it's more just like balancing incentives.
I bet it's a faff to pay.
Exactly. It's also a faff to pay. So I think it's actually one of those things where it's more about incentives than it is about necessarily, like, really a statement of, like, what you should and shouldn't do. In the last episode, we asked if voting makes sense. Giving your vote is vanishingly unlikely to swing the outcome. Why bother? We looked at expressive theories. Sorry, this was actually in the first episode. We split into two. The voting is more about the experience, and then we looked at the question of moral duty in the
most recent
episode.
One.
A lot of people feel a sense of moral duty around voting, with voter turnout dropping and concern that young people, pesky Gen Zs, are disengaged. Should we enshrine this duty in law? Actually, Gen Z turnout was high during the most recent midterm elections in the US. It's part
That's
of the reason
cool.
the results were different to the polling, because polling is based on calling people at home, and who picks up the phone at home? Old people. So it gets a very biased view.
That's interesting. They should start polling over TikTok and then...
Mate, genuinely.
Yeah.
Like, they should start... Like, it's actually amazing that we don't do more voting and polling and stuff digitally, considering it exists at the tech. We're basically going to discuss pros and cons, and it's going to be fairly quick fire, and then we're going to move on to the Sandel-esque question:
should you sell your vote?
Should you be allowed to sell your vote?
Which or actually, trade your vote?
Yeah, which actually, like, you know, free market kind of makes sense. Sorry, carry on.
We'll come to that. So, let me give you the arguments in favor, and let's do these one by one and just debate them quickly. The arguments for making voting mandatory is that you would increase voter turnout, especially in the USA, where it's dropped below 60%, although not in the midterms, as you said. But I think...
Oh, I don't know if turnout... There was a larger Gen Z turnout, but I don't know what the overall turnout was.
Yeah, I think this stat I had was before the midterms. So,
I think this makes sense. The reason I say that is because we talked a bit about the idea of mandate, right? And, you know, hey, maybe one of the duties is, like, to maintain democratic infrastructure. When you start to get to the point where, like, oh, maybe less than the majority of people are going to be voting, we're starting to risk our democratic infrastructure. So I could see that argument, yes.
Yeah, and all the evidence, as for the Australia example earlier, is that this is one of the clear things that definitely is affected. When you make it mandatory, people turn up, people vote. It would probably also put pressure on improving access. You were talking about voter suppression in the last episode. If people have to vote and it's, like, really long for them to do so, that creates pressure to make it easier and to invest in that infrastructure.
Yeah, but I guess part of the problem is that voter suppression is largely enacted by government, right?
So you're saying it's deliberate.
Yeah, so, like, Republicans make it harder for basically black inner city people to vote because they don't vote Republican.
So what's a means by which this happens? What's an example?
Shutting polling stations in counties that are more democratic, meaning less, shutting polling stations in areas that vote more democratic.
To force you to go to...
To effectively make the cost higher.
Wow.
Right? Making them making the polling stations open for less time, right? However, counter argument, anyone can mail vote, more people should mail vote. Maybe that was more normalized during COVID. Maybe that's part of the reason things are changing.
So even though it was sort of deliberately done and there was a cynical reading of that, do you think it's possible that it's that the expressed reason is, oh, because of COVID, there's pressure on polling stations, we should, yeah.
Oh, no, it's cynical. It is cynical. Yeah. Like, for example, the introduction of the requirement to show ID, right? Like who doesn't have ID? Generally, it's like immigrants who are legally there, of course. You know, the idea that like the false narrative that like, oh, there's lots of impersonation where there's no evidence to support it. Like it's just something for Trump to say to scare old white people.
Interesting. Well, that segues quite neatly into the second argument in favor of mandatory voting, which is a demographic argument, which is that some groups systematically might be less likely to vote and making them would make government more representative. And now you've given an example of where that's been sort of deliberately enforced, but it might be the case that there are, you know, minorities who systematically don't vote because it's not something that's encouraged in the same way.
No, I can see that. Like, I mean, for example, actually, if you ask the average inner city kid in, for example, London, like, do they vote? They'd be like, no. Right. So maybe forcing them would be a better way to force them to be somewhat civically engaged, right?
Yeah, because people feel assured that other people like them will be voting.
Yeah. Basically, it's much easier to make people do stuff than to convince people it's cool to do stuff.
Yeah. And then another thing that I really like, I buy this argument a lot, is that if you make voting mandatory, candidates can concentrate purely on issues rather than spending some amount of time encouraging people to bother to vote at all. To market the act of voting as well as market their policies, this way they know people are going
to
vote.
And this now brings it into the cons area, right? If you're forcing people to vote, that means you're going to get an even less engaged average voter, right? Mm-hmm. And that actually means, by contrast, maybe rather than concentrating on policy and issues, candidates focus on methods of communicate, methods of driving engagement that actually, you know, you could talk total nonsense or basically lie or be misleading to drive votes.
You're saying you'd be more hyperbolic, more like clickbaity. It's the kind of government, the Brexit-y kind of take back control.
Yes,
that becomes
the theme of,
okay.
Also things like who has the biggest Twitter following, who has the biggest TikTok following, who's best looking, like is going to matter more and more as you bring people, as you force more people to vote who are actually less engaged in policy.
I see what you mean.
Which
I'm sure all that stuff always mattered, but you're right. Yeah. Like if people don't care, they don't engage. Whereas if they have to, they're more likely to be influenced by it.
I was listening to a really interesting podcast about Fox News. I think it was Robert Ailes, the founder of Fox News, who said about Richard Nixon, right? He said, Nixon was the last president who couldn't guest on a talk show.
As in because they didn't exist in the same way or the distribution wasn't there? Or?
As in because TV wasn't popular before that, right? And now the way that we vote is so soundbitey and social media. And it's the same way that maybe Obama or whoever you want to say, well, actually Trump followed Obama. So maybe Obama was the last person who wasn't an internet celebrity, right? Where it's like, you just can't be president if you're not an internet celebrity because that's how you drive people to vote for you. And maybe this is encouraging that kind of actually are arguably bad.
Well, it was striking in the presidential elections. You know, they do those debates before, and that's become more and more of a feature. I feel like, I don't know when they were created as a format, but they seem to be more of a sort of formality. And I feel like in later years, it's been about getting the right soundbite. They've become major kind
of... That's always been a thing for TV, to be fair.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
But yeah, it's even more because now it's not just like a soundbite as in like, that's the bit people remember. Now it's a soundbite as in like, that's
this
the bit we're going to put on TikTok.
Packaged and yeah. Interesting. Sticking with the arguments for...
Despite the fact that we're totally undermining them.
The other argument is that when everyone has to vote, governments must consider the whole electorate in policy formulation. Now, this could go two ways.
That's nonsense, though.
Well, it could go two ways, like you say, because it could mean that if everyone has to vote, you have to be more clickbaity again.
Yeah.
But the idea is that, okay, since everyone has to vote, we need to think about young people. We need to not just about our core voters and making sure we get enough of them.
I don't know. Because say, for example, more people vote. First of all, again, this is a social media factor. Like we can do different messaging to different groups. So maybe it's more that, okay, we're going to target our kind of semi-racist stuff to old white people. And we're going to target our anti-new immigrant stuff to current immigrants. Because actually those are the people don't realize those are the people who are most replaceable by immigrants. It's recent immigrants.
Yeah, that's actually striking in the Brexit stats.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I don't know that I necessarily agree with it, but okay, I understand what they're saying. And also there's a wider argument aside from the fact that social media lets you target certain groups. Still, we tend to find that certain parties are the parties of certain groups, right? Yes, if the groups that you're targeting don't hit a majority, then maybe you're like, okay, I need to add a couple groups. But it doesn't mean you appeal to everyone. If I need 51% of the vote, that doesn't mean I need 51% of all groups. That means like, okay, I know I've got old white people and I know I've got the kids of old white people. I need to add, okay, let's add particularly religious people. And it's just, you're, instead of appealing to everyone being broad-based, you're just like, no, I need to really appeal
to bring the marginal ones in who now have to vote. So let's give them a reason to vote for me.
Yeah, yeah. Within my popular groups.
Interesting, interesting.
There's always the option spoiler ballot.
So that's, yeah, that's an argument for mandatory voting being fine, because you're not forcing people to vote one way or another. That's an argument for like why it doesn't harm citizens to make them vote. Yeah.
So always the option spoiler ballot. So this is one, or as you spelled it in the notes, ballet.
Did I?
So I agree with this, but I guess what if in a way, I agree with that, but what if we're basically just taxing the people who already can't vote? So say, for example, in the US, if you don't marry the requirement to vote with easy access to voting, more information about postal votes, for example,
you're just collecting a lot of $20 fines.
Yeah, you're just collecting $20 fines from people who already have expressed the fact that they can't afford to take the time out to go and vote. But yeah, I mean, okay, I understand that point. You can always spoil your ballot. Yeah, like I actually kind of agree with that.
There are two more arguments in favor. One is kind of following on from the last episode we did about if we say voting is a civic duty, then doing this just enshrines that in law and it kind of formalizes that sort of democratic principle that we're driving at. That's hard to argue with, I think.
Yeah. And I think the other one encourages everyone to be more politically aware. I think that's fair. I think the other thing is that it also takes advantage of, this is like not a statement of morality, right or wrong. I think it's interesting how like introducing a fine really changes your psychology or your economic behavior around it, right? Because the difference between, you know, not paying to go and do something versus being fined to do something, like it's even if you made the fine £5, the impact would be very disproportionate beyond £5. Like, because you should be able to factor in like, oh, actually, you know, it wasn't worth my time before. Is £5 that big a difference? No, it's still not worth it, right? Mm-hmm. But we overvalue that £5 because suddenly it's like, oh, I'm doing something wrong. I have to pay a fine.
This is a fascinating, I've got two really great Freakonomics examples that connect to this. So one that completely supports what you just said is the plastic bag tax that was introduced.
Exactly.
And you remember in supermarkets, and it was literally like 5p to begin with. And that was to say, if you want to get a plastic bag afterwards to cut down on plastic waste, you had to pay 5p, and suddenly everyone started remembering to bring their sort of carrier bags and plastic waste really reduced. And that was a really good example of fines. So the net result of the plastic bag tax was an example of a fine that worked really effectively because it was a nudge that influenced behavior. There's another example where it didn't work, which is really funny, which is in Freakonomics. They gave the example of a kindergarten where parents are often late to pick up their kids. And so they thought, how do we correct this behavior? Will introduce a late fine. So if you're late by 10 minutes, you pay $10. And ironically, what happened is suddenly more and more people started being late because they saw it as a fee rather than a fine. And they were like, cool. Now I can be late. And that, you know, $10 is worth my time because I'm working. So, and therefore.
So this might be an argument that this could have an adverse effect.
Exactly.
Maybe less people will turn up because they'll be like, nah, I'm like, I've paid my fine. So I've done my civic duty. I've discharged my civic duty by paying my tax.
Exactly. Exactly. So it could go either way. And it's hard to say. It seems to be the case empirically from the Australian example,
it brings turnout
that up. It does increase turnout.
Yeah,
I've got a really interesting stat on this though, and this links to the last thing we said, which is that doing this should encourage people to be more politically aware. Unfortunately, the data does not bear this out. In fact, the data bears out that voting gets people to vote and not much else. Contrary to many theorists' expectations, it appears that compulsory voting has no significant effect on individual political knowledge. It doesn't encourage ignorant voters to become more informed. Individual political conversation, propensity to contact politicians, all these things that you could measure, participation in campaign activities, the likelihood of being contacted by a party or politician, the quality of representation, blah, 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 blah. All of these things, they don't empirically change. Political scientists have also been unable to demonstrate that compulsory voting leads to more egalitarian or left-leaning policy outcomes. The empirical literature so far shows that compulsory voting gets them to vote, but it's not clear that it actually makes people more engaged.
Yep.
They just turn up.
Right. And let's combine this with some of the issues we were talking about earlier. What happens when we suddenly have like a world where people are consuming media through highly curated formats to drive their voting behavior, not to inform them, right?
It becomes quite vulnerable, actually, at that point.
Yeah, it becomes extremely vulnerable, right? It's actually like, oh, I actually have these people who have to vote and they don't much care about it. Those are the perfect people to target. And it really actually does kind of give credence to this idea that, like, in the words of Lippmann, as we discussed in another episode, democracy is far too important to leave it to the to public opinion.
Now let's go to the arguments against mandatory voting. And there's a number, and I think probably the strongest one is exactly like you say, if you make everyone vote, but we exist in an environment where there's social media is highly influential in terms of what people are deciding, and people don't necessarily get better informed, you suddenly have, you're supercharging the vulnerability of electoral outcomes.
Yeah, and I think actually it comes to that thing that we discussed in either last episode or the episode before. For us, it was all at the same time today, where I kind of said, like, actually the kind of equilibrium pricing of voting, it's quite nice that kind of is an equilibrium. It kind of prices in how much do you actually care about this thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's actually, it's almost like a nice sense check, of like, do you actually care about this? Like, you have to bother coming to vote, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas now it's like, you have to vote or else you're charged some money. And I guess it kind of avoids those people who perhaps are more susceptible to that because they have less strongly held, this is not to say that they're like in some way stupid or something. Mm-hmm. It's just that they have less strongly held views, right? Mm-hmm. Like, a catchy TikTok video is more likely to sway your voting behavior if you don't have some strong prior belief on how you were going to vote, right? It's much harder to change someone's mind than it is to give someone an opinion.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Let me reel off the other arguments against, and we can make of them what we will. Firstly, it could be seen as undemocratic to make people vote because it's a kind of infringement of liberty. What do we think about that?
I don't know about undemocratic, but maybe illiberal or unfair in its own right, or an infringement of liberty. Like,
undemocratic seems ironic.
it seems like a tautology. Tautology? No, not a tautology. An oxymoron.
Yeah.
But like oxymoron. Maybe in some, maybe in some way wrong. I get that. I don't think so. I to be fair, I could see this fitting in the same way that like taxes fits in. Like, I don't think it's necessarily an infringement of your liberty. It's a necessary cost of maintaining our infrastructure, arguably, if you were to do it. I personally don't think it's necessary, but like if we entered a world where like it was necessary to maintain a democratic infrastructure, like I don't think it would be undemocratic or unfair, because it's not a huge cost, is it? Like it certainly doesn't, to the extent it infringes your liberty, it's not in a way that matters, right? Like okay, whatever, you have to do a postal vote.
It would be undemocratic if you were to make people vote for a particular party. Yeah. If you had to turn up and vote for...
Yeah, you're still getting a choice there.
Yeah, you're still getting a choice.
Oh, yeah. So focusing on the undemocratic part, it's definitely not undemocratic. Is it unfair or, you know, illiberal? I don't... To the extent it is, it's acceptably so.
It could be classed in the same bracket as paying taxes, in which case...
Yeah, exactly. You
know, I think that's the justification there.
That's fine.
This next one kind of follows what we were saying about voter vulnerability, the vulnerability of elections, which is that people don't necessarily vote in their own self-interest anyway or do what's best for them. If you make them vote, then...
This is what we were basically talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is already bad enough that there are people who are induced to vote based on misleading information. Now you're going to, like we were saying earlier, the marginal person who otherwise wouldn't have voted is probably more influenced by influencers.
The next one is that there are more votes to count, so there's an administrative cost to that, but also it may increase the number of either spoiled ballots or donkey votes, so votes for random candidates like Mr. Dustbinhead.
Spoiled ballots I actually don't have an issue with, like that's fine either. That's an expression that's like a reassurance of the fact that it's providing a spoiled ballot ensures I don't mind or I don't know versus I wasn't able to vote, right? So that's fine. Random votes, okay. On the one hand, maybe a bit of a problem. On the other, this is a practical, not a moral or a principle one, but so unlikely to matter. But okay, I could see a world, okay, if your voter turnout is 60%, you force 100% to come, and the majority of them just put a random vote. Okay, maybe that's starting to be a problem.
Yeah.
Right? But I don't think that's likely.
It's the administrative cost. Elections happen relatively infrequently anyway, right?
Yeah.
What is also a relevant cost, though, is that resources have to be spent on whether those who failed to vote had sufficient reasons.
Yeah, just administration of these fines.
It's like, were you actually ill? Like, how do you collect the fines? All these things.
Yeah, I guess on a relative scale, so uncostly in the scale of government, it's like, it's not even worth discussing.
The final one, as we already discussed, is that there's not much evidence that mandatory voting makes people better informed. There's only real evidence that it makes people turn up. And then to sum that all up, how valuable is it making people vote? I mean, how much do we care about that? Do we actually prefer the model where, like you said, there's an equilibrium effect because people who care enough are the ones that come out to vote? Is it better to leave it that way and make it a choice than to enforce it?
Yeah, I mean, like, one thing to say is, like, maybe it's kind of a good thing. Like, maybe it's an expression of the fact that, like, hey, most people are happy if most people don't want to choose between two options. Like, maybe most people, like, both options are pretty good, right? Like,
or equally bad, but fine.
Yeah, you know? Well, that's the difficult part, right? But activism helps to kind of counterbalance that, because then the way that you fight that issue isn't by voting, it's by activism, right? And vocal opposition. But, you know, you could see in some way, if 95% of people aren't turning out to vote, you could see some argument that that's a good thing, right? That's an expression of like, oh, wow, we've got to the point where like our society is so stable and happy and comfortable that actually the multiple options are good. Like we shouldn't just have like really far out there parties to encourage people to vote against them. That said, is that actually true practically? Like, I don't know. I personally think there is a plurality of opinion amongst people. The synthesis of that over time is kind of the beauty of the democratic process, and that like maybe that's maybe if I heard that somewhere had a 95% like not turning up rate, my gut would probably say like people are disengaged or don't believe they can change things, mm-hmm. rather than they're very happy.
Yeah.
To counter that point, what I said about spoiled votes, at least it validates I don't mind.
Yeah.
Versus, but then it could also be an expression of apathy or like I don't like any of this. Mm-hmm. Right. Again, that's a place for vocal opposition. That's kind of the measure. You don't measure the political sentiment just through voting. You mm-hmm. measure it through so much more. So let's kind of summarize then. Jake, do you think mandatory voting should be a thing? Or more specifically, do you think there should be a small fine for not voting?
That's a really, yeah, I suppose that's, they're not necessarily synonymous, are they? Although one feels like a way of achieving the other. Because if you're being fined, is that because you violated some law? Like, could you have a fine and not make it mandatory? You could make it a non-voting fee and then it's not. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing is then you're just going to be charging. I think the number one thing is you need to make all countries that have democratic voting mm-hmm. should make it as easy and accessible as possible to vote. Mm-hmm. So only when the cost is acceptably low mm-hmm. can we then start thinking about forcing people to vote.
Yeah.
Because so long as there are people who would like to vote and don't for practical reasons, levying a fee on them is just an extra tax. It's yeah, ridiculous. It's unfair. It's actually already, like, there's plenty of people who already want their voice to be heard and are struggling. Suddenly, like, making them also pay for that fact would actually just be painful, not helpful.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm torn. I went into this thinking I think it would be a good thing, but that's because I still hold on to some belief that even though the evidence bears out it doesn't make people more engaged, it feels like it should.
You just
But then is that a good thing? Like you're saying, in a world where TikTok can have
is engaged,
outsized influence.
Exactly. Is engaged even a good thing? It's a good sense check that like people are actually like thinking about this rather than.
Maybe I'm leaning actually away from it. Maybe that's drawing me into the realm of it would be better to have a sort of epistocracy of people.
Yeah,
I feel like what they're talking about.
I feel like the more I kind of listen, we'll make a separate episode where we discuss like what makes a democracy legitimate
and who should
Lippmann versus Dewey. Dewey's a famous proponent of democracy and kind of his articulations that we should think of ourselves all as on a team together. Yeah, maybe we'll do that as a separate episode to discuss. But yeah, it's amazing. Like the more I talk about democracy, the like more cynical or like apathetic or like tired I kind of literally it's been 2 hours we've been talking about it, so I am now literally tired. Very quickly, just to kind of it was going to be its whole own episode, but let's tack it on here.
Yes.
Should you be allowed to sell your vote?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Really interesting examples where, like, you know, things that you might consider civic duties have in the past been sellable. So, for example, during the American Civil War, you were able to sell your place. Mm. You could pay someone else to fill your role.
And in fighting, you mean?
Yeah, in fighting in the Civil War, if you were conscript. And in some sense, you know, I suppose, like, it's an expression of free markets and preferences, but it's also an expression of...
Intensity kind of gets captured by that, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, ultimately, right, say, you know, if I'm indifferent between two things, we'll go back to from another episode, our example of going for Italian or Chinese, you don't mind, your friends are split over it, right? If one of your friends says, look, if we go to my meal, I'll pay... for you to eat, that's a tangible benefit from an instrumental theory. Like you are net benefiting, they are net benefiting, the person who's offering you, like, let's go to my one and I'll pay you. Mm-hmm. And the other, let's say, for example, the other team is also able to pay. In a world where the fee is sufficiently small such that they both can afford and it's an expression of preference, then actually the pricing mechanism cannot arguably be fair, right? Because then the equilibrium would be the point where, like, I make enough, you know, I'm getting a free meal, so I'm benefiting, and whoever is paying me is... paying enough such that their happiness from getting the meal they want minus losing the money roughly equals the other person, like, is like, okay, I don't get the meal I want, but I save that money. Right? So it's actually like a nice pricing mechanism, which is what something cool that it introduces. The problem is, and this comes back to this idea of like civic duty, like, you know, if you are part of a society and you're fighting in a civil war to represent part of it, there's a kind of an innate feeling that like to really be part of that, you don't pay someone else to do it, right? Mm-hmm. Paying a mercenary to go on your behalf isn't the same as truly having fought for that.
What if they're so much better than you at fighting?
Well, actually, that's actually a very good argument, right? Like, but it's some sort of expression of like, this is my devotion to this thing. It was really interesting. I was listening to a podcast about Mugabe, right, in Zimbabwe. And it was saying how like so much, and this is interesting, so much of the political clout of the ZANU-PF party was that so many of them were ex-revolutionaries. And so like, there was kind of this expression of commitment, right? And I guess that's kind of, maybe that's it. Maybe it's about communicating your ideals and the extent to which you hold a certain view by being willing to risk a huge cost. And so like paying an amount of money can never be compared to the risk of losing your life, right? Or, you know, the risk of, in this case, it's not risk of losing your life. It's the expression of your, to put a price on your opinion, right? It's a bit like, you know, okay, in the case of advertisements, we know it doesn't matter. But like, let's say, for example, someone said to you, hey, Jake, imagine you had a platform, right?
This podcast.
And imagine someone said to you, hey, Jake, I'm going to pay you to say this thing that you don't actually think, right? I guess the question is there any amount of money you should be willing to accept?
This podcast is brought to you by the Republican Party.
But there's a difference between like saying, hey, this is an advert, and saying, this is my opinion, you know, and hey, secretly I was paid for that, right? Do you see how that kind of can undermine the sanctity of that platform and of your, you having of an opinion?
Exactly. It's why Instagram had to crack down on sponsored posts, right?
And also clarify what is sponsored, right? Because it's to clarify what's my actual opinion and what's not.
Which is an interesting argument related to this, specifically about the selling or trading of votes, bit of data. Most people do see it as something immoral, and most philosophers would tend to agree. I don't know if you as an audience have thought about this, but there's a possibility that you think that if you were allowed to sell your votes, then the rich and powerful would be able to buy them more. They could have more influence in government than they already do.
Yes.
And so that would be horrible.
Well, actually, to be fair, this is one of the things that, like, this is a kind of cyclical slippery slope argument. You'll notice when I talked about my example of Chinese versus Italian, I'd specified that the amount was small enough that both of them could afford it. Like, when it starts to become issues of bargaining power, and also I talked about something trivial like a meal. What happens when you start to talk about the power that, like, the people who are selling their votes don't realize will entrench further power to then not need to buy your vote in future?
Exactly. To summarize the arguments around this, the argument in favor of selling your vote is that it could lead to more efficient outcomes. And that's basically it.
Yeah.
It's like people who don't care can get some money for it. People who do care can actually register the intensity of their vote by buying more votes, or they can have more influence on the outcome, which kind of links to the instrumental theories we talked about earlier.
Yeah. I mean, in some sense, do you not, this is the other thing, like there's some a free will filter in between. But, you know, some people argue a lot about like, oh, like misleading information on social media, blah, 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 right? Like if you're a truly free will, like rational argument, it's like, well, people can show you whatever they want. People form their own opinion, so it's still their own opinion, right? But in some sense, people do buy votes. It's just that they use this inefficient method of
signaling and marketing
and misleading statements and talking nonsense about policies that they then don't or can't enact. Right. Rather than just being like, hey, look, I'll just give you some financial benefit. Right. In some sense, that would be more efficient or more honest than the palaver of all of this political theater that doesn't actually matter.
It's true. It's true. And there is a logical follow on from this, which is that if you are indifferent to the outcome, then why can't you just sell your vote? Because, you know, even if there's a moral duty to vote, the national share of votes will stay the same. It's not like you're creating votes. It's not like you're introducing new votes into the system. You're just allowing someone who cares more than you do to shape the result because it doesn't matter to you. And you might wonder then, how would you price this? But that's the beauty of the free market. So the price you sell your vote for is obviously the equilibrium between what you think it's worth and what the person who buys it is willing to pay. I've got here in the example, but let's say Ant really hates the Tories, hypothetically.
Yeah. Hypothetically. Just an example.
If he can find a group of people who are indifferent, maybe they wouldn't bother to vote at all, and he could buy their vote at £20 each, maybe all our interns last summer, if they didn't care, and Ant could buy their votes, everyone can be made better off. Ant now has an arsenal of votes with which to try and influence the outcome of the election, making it more rational for him to participate.
Strictly, is this illegal?
Yes, it is.
It is legal?
No, it's illegal.
It's illegal?
With an I. Illegal.
How do they monitor it?
I don't know that they do.
I guess the problem is like those people could always say they're going to do it and then just not.
Yeah,
because they can't monitor their vote.
That's actually literally one of the arguments around this is that, you know, there's no clear way of making making sure it happened. I mean, that would be a great fraud. Buy my vote.
Yeah.
But yeah, Ant is, if you look at it that way, as a sort of free market approach, Ant is doing more than discharging his duty. He's discharging it in like a supercharged way. He's really politically engaged. He's demonstrating a lot of the civic virtues
and again,
that we value.
Like we said, like making the paying the implicit cost of putting time and effort into things, paying to amplify your message, paying marketing campaigns, etc. In some less direct way, it's the same thing.
And exactly. I mean, as an economist, it sounds highly efficient and we love efficiency. We live for efficiency.
It maximizes benefit.
It maximizes utility across multiple people. But there are, of course, problems, and the best articulation of those problems that I've come across is by Michael Sandel, the Harvard philosophy professor, and he makes two very compelling arguments against it. One is he says that by selling your vote, you are literally corrupting the good that you're selling. You're corrupting the sanctity of voting. By selling your vote, you make it a commodity instead of being like a sort of expression of democracy. You've changed the good itself. Yeah. He gives loads of other examples of when this can happen, but in voting specifically,
sex might be one of those.
Sex
examples.
Is another example. Yeah. Selling kidneys. He says you're corrupting the sort of thing itself. The second, and I think more compelling here, is the argument around bargaining power, which is that one, there's a problem around pricing, but two, there's literally a problem of buying elections, because let's say Ant is Jeff Bezos. Ant has near unlimited wealth, not literally, but he's very, very rich. And he could come in and say, not just offer me 20 quid, he could offer me 100 grand. And he could offer loads of people 100 grand. And people be like, wow, yeah, I mean, why wouldn't I sell my vote now? It's not worth that much to me.
Yep.
You've suddenly completely changed the dynamics and the opportunity costs of voting.
And now let's imagine let's say it's $100 a vote. You know, he has hundreds of billions of dollars. Let's say he buys enough votes and enough votes in House of Representatives in the the Senate. Let's say you just buy enough to hit 51%, and then you bring in a bunch of laws that say like, and now I, you know, have total control forever, right? I mean, that's not realistic, but this is kind of the extreme of the argument they're making, right? Like if they then will say like, and we never need to buy your votes again. Actually, now this is, you know, we completely use this power to undermine the system.
Well, Hitler kind of did that.
Pretty much. It's just that he did it by building popular vote and then doing that rather than
buying
people. But it's the same sort of mechanism, and it's avoiding an easy way of people having access to that. Right. And it's also the same reason that we put a lot of checks and balances to stop people in power being able to do that.
It's why checks and balances are so important. It's why they're critical to the system. Exactly.
And it's also why we make, you know, that happening indirectly, such as gifts for politicians, illegal.
So, I mean, those are pretty strong arguments against. But before we wrap this up, let's challenge some of those assumptions. Whenever people talk about buying votes being a problem, they kind of implicitly or explicitly assume that you would buy votes in a socially destructive way. That's not necessarily the case. I mean, you could be highly benevolent and you could influence votes to be more efficient. We enter the realm of like subjective good and bad and stuff.
But we talked about this Bezos example, right? Let's say Bezos does that. Flip it around. What's the outcome? Let's say there's a benevolent dictator who's like, oh no, actually I'll pay a little bit more and I'll use your votes to do good. And then you're actually creating a market for this good, the votes, right? And we can actually get an expression of like how much these people care about it. And also someone like Bezos would then probably reach the point where it's like, it's not worth spending all this money. You know, you'd reach an equilibrium point where everyone kind of ends up.
Yeah. And then actually it's inefficient. Then that's the irony, is all you've done is sort of introduce a price that kind of inflates and suddenly like everyone's paying everyone to vote and it becomes...
Well, but I mean, that just drives the price down, right?
In theory. But it would follow sort of pricing dynamics.
The beauty of the free market.
indeed. On the same sort of benevolent theme, what if you just paid people to vote at all? What if you were like, I want to improve youth participation, so I'm going to go and pay all these kids to vote and it's their choice.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy their vote in the sense of like, I'm just going to encourage them to vote. That's probably less
likely. But that's a very, very different argument though, right?
It's a different kind of
case. In fact, why didn't we discuss that in the first part of this episode? What if instead
of fining people,
we gave people a reward? That's what we should be doing.
Wow. Yeah.
That's a fantastic... We should actually have that as a policy.
Oh my God.
how do we miss such an obvious... Like, that's actually the kind of thing I would 100% approve of.
As a sort of UBI for voting.
Well, it's kind of... It's like taxes to... You know, we pay tax to the government to provide a public good. The government should pay people to provide a public good, right? So come and vote. You're discharging your civic duty. You're providing a public good, giving mandate to the government. And we're also compensating you for the fact that you have a cost to come and vote.
Yeah, totally. We should absolutely do suppression thing. That's quite a nice idea.
We should actually pay people like 25 quid. The only problem is it would be really costly.
Yeah.
But then it's just money that you're giving to people. They're just going to spend it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it cycles back into the economy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite a nice inverse tax. I like that. Guys, if you like that idea, spread this around.
Yeah, that's it. We're using our platform.
So that's a sort of possibly silly example with the sort of paying people to vote at all if you were like a sort of benevolent individual who just wanted to encourage social participation. But the government could totally do that, as discussed. I suppose we mentioned this, but one of the other things that the problem with buying people's votes is that ballots are secret. So you'd have no way of registering, did so-and-so vote the way that I wanted to.
So really the latter of like just encouraging people to vote and just assuming that they'd vote in your interest is the only thing that you could do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, high level, how do you feel about it? Do you think there should be a market for voting?
No, was my sense before we recorded this. I think it still is.
Mine's still no, yeah.
I think it's just because the risks seem to outweigh the benefits.
Yeah, so a big part of it is, I think, like, risks outweigh the benefits. So just don't allow the incentives to arise. I think the entrenchment of power is too scary. Mm-hmm. And especially when people can make their money, you know, the system isn't perfect. People can make their money imposing externalities on others and then entrench that power. We see that already, you know, with, like, lots of large industries and then lobbying in government. Like, we don't want to exacerbate that, and also bargaining power does exist as an issue, right? And ultimately you don't want to reach a point where like it is more efficient for a government to just pay people for their votes than to actually do good policy. Say for example, and you know, something on climate change or something where that has huge impacts in the multi-decade or you know, mid to long-term horizon. Like, no amount of paying people to vote to do that should make sense. It allows too many muddled incentives between short and midterm. But I also think, yeah, like there's some sort of feeling in my heart that like this is an expression of your part of being part of this society that you shouldn't be able to abdicate, right? In the same, it's the same reason that I personally feel a strong motivation duty to vote. It's and the same way that like no amount of money would realistically get me to publicly voice opinions I don't agree with. I mean, if someone wants to be dumb enough to pay me to say stuff I think anyway, fine. Or if I'm able to caveat very clearly that this is a sponsorship, this is not my opinion, fine. Say for example someone came to us and said, we like your platform, I want you to say, actually, is Trump that bad a guy, do an episode on it, right, and make it sound authentic, or here's a script. Like, there's no amount of money that would get me to do that, because the kind of sanctity of my identity and opinion is important to me.
But everybody has their price entity.
Yeah, grant. But I mean, like, that would just then be like balancing, like, hey, the platform isn't that big, like, it's not gonna make that much an impact, etc. And then I can always just correct it later or whatever, right? But I think you understand my point there. Do you share that view?
Yeah, no, I do. I do agree.
Jesus,
yeah,
Jake, I have an original opinion for once in your life.
Let's wrap this one up.
Guys, we're going to do another episode soon about who should be allowed to vote and also the legitimacy of democracy in general, and the Lippmann versus Dewey, which I think would be interesting.
I think we can come back and do that.
We'll come back. There's just so much to do on this. We will do it.
Sorry, let's wrap this one up because you were accusing me of not having an original thought, and then I was going
to
say...
So you're going to make one up? Should I pay you to have one?
That'll be 10 Australian dollars.
20.
20, indeed. God, it's been a long session.
Yeah, no, you're opinion,
who am I?
it is allowed to share my opinion on that. So let's wrap it up there. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you indeed. Tell us what you think about the ideas. Tell us if you think people should be paid to vote,
and do book a call with us and fill the survey. That'd be great.